Lionel, it's always a great inspiration. Every year we have speakers of great wisdom pass on, probably from many generations back, wisdom to us. And I 2 years ago we had Alden Josey talk about this spiritual arc that peaks between 65 and 75. And our conference is at that period where hopefully we have some spiritual peak, but we're also worried about our declining elan vital of our physical energy. And as a man of wisdom, I want to acknowledge what the Judeo tradition has passed on to this conference. As an individual, I come last night in my small group, I had an insight after the group that I come from ancestral lineage on both sides of illiterates. Illiterates, you know, people who had no education. And so people like me are able to come to a conference like this and sap from the roots of well-educated, seasoned people. And my question has to do with the boundaries of the identity of this conference and of individuals who come here, because we had another very prestigious Jungian teacher who was going to come to our conference, and then he thought we weren't like educated enough and wouldn't be able to follow his Jungian language, but you've been able to feed us and speak to us, and we want to keep our audience open to a wide range of people who are not just the elites.
Yeah, well, I'm an expert in oversimplification.
My question has to do with this question of boundaries, because my hypothesis is that there is something called healthy masochism. And as a runner, I know that there is planned pain that helps me clarify my definition of self.
Yeah.
And as I seek my PR in running, it helps that somewhat, it helps find a role where pain has meaning.
Yeah.
And is that something you can address?
I could do that, yes. Well, the issue of, first of all, I didn't like that notion that the peak occurs at 75. Because I'm about to go over that cliff. I think that...
Let me just tell you, in my group we had a 97-year-old who was touched by the... touched by the archetype of the orphan, and he keeps going.
I think it's important as we age. I've just recently did a book on Jung and aging, if anybody's interested, if I could put a plug in there. And the book is about the fact that as you age, of course, you have physical decline, but your spiritual and psychological maturity should be able to help you compensate for that. So it's not just relentless, remorseless decline because of the spiritual and psychological development that occurs. Now, the issue of masochism, I'm glad you raised that, because I don't want this notion of surrender or letting go to be confused with masochistic submission, where you give over your sense of personal authority to another person. Masochism has a very bad reputation because it was taken out of the psychiatric manual, the DSM it's called, because it was felt to be a misogynistic term that blamed women for society's failures. And but I'm afraid there are still masochistic personalities. These are people who repeatedly get themselves into bad situations, who unconsciously produce suffering by getting into recurrent financial disasters, bad relationships, accidents, not just occasionally, happens to everyone, but time after time after time, because unconsciously they're putting themselves in this situation because they think they deserve punishment because they're a bad person. So that's not the, that is what Freud called moral masochism. So that's not what I'm talking about. So I'm glad you raised that, because it's an important distinction. This doesn't mean you're being masochistic when you surrender.
Okay, so while you were speaking, a memory of an experience I had with my father about 25 years ago came up with quite a lot of insistence. My father, when he was 70, had a visionary experience sitting in his chair, and that awakened an openness to a lot of paranormal stuff, especially mediumistic kind of things. You may remember the age that most of us are, an event in South Africa about 25 years ago where a young American woman was murdered in front of her car, Amy Beale, and it became a transformational experience in South Africa in fairly short order. But my father knew Amy briefly. He was a sculptor, and she was brought to him as a potential model for a diving trophy that was being made. And he chose not to use her because her body was too young for the image. But he met her briefly. And so the thing happened in South Africa. I had a dream right at the same time it happened. I wasn't aware of that thing at the time, where I walked into a clearing in the jungle, a bright open clearing, and there was a woman hanging like this in the midst of the clearing with her entrails coming out from beneath between her legs. And behind her, hanging slightly above and behind, was like a golden, luminous Christ crucified. Wow. And I go, whoa, that doesn't seem to be my dream. Whose dream is that? And this was before I'd heard about Amy. Mm-hmm. And then 3 days later, my father called me up almost in tears, and he was very distraught. He'd been having these altered state experiences for years, you know, before this, but he said, I've been in the presence of evil. He felt not that he had a vision of Amy's murder, but that he had been there. And that he felt because he had been there, he was part of it. And he was extremely unhappy. And so I shared my dream with him, and I said, I think this dream is for you, because what you saw wasn't evil. It was, excuse me, it was a redemptive act, and it was a Christ act. And it sort of came out after that Amy had gone there with great commitment about apartheid, but also with foreboding. Mm-hmm. And what came out of it is her parents forgave the persons who did the thing. A foundation was raised up, Amy Beale Foundation, dedicated to positive things in Africa, and the people who had murdered her became part of that foundation. Yeah. And the forgiveness. But it's interesting in the transformation of evil through just a different understanding and perspective. But also it was interested in the tandem experience of my father and myself. Yeah. in different ways.
Well, I think we can dream for other people sometimes. That's an extraordinarily numinous, amazing dream, showing you the presence of divinity in the presence of all this horrible dismemberment, that both are present at the same time.
Well, it was a reflection, too. You're talking about ideas of God, and it definitely went right for that.
Well, that he is present while this horrible thing is going on.
Even a reflection of it.
That's really a teaching dream.
Yes.
Yeah.
I haven't shared it much, though, because I think you're the third person. And
well, I can see how it could be misunderstood, but I think it really is a teaching dream.
Well, my father, when he had this extended luminous experience while he was watching Monday Night Football. The whole thing changed. And the end, when he woke up from the thing that was on the television was called a glory instead of Monday Night Football. But anyway, the family, I was the only one that could really be with my dad in a possible way, positive way, when he made the changes, like this lumina.
Would you allow me to tell people about that dream? Or
absolutely.
Was it very, would you mind? I mean, it's a absolutely wonderful example. Would you mind sending it to me?
Sure. Or?
Yeah, I'll give you the address. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's a perfect example of a numinous dream in the midst of intense suffering, which shows the presence of the divine in the midst of the suffering. I mean, it couldn't be said any more simple. Thank you. Where are we?
Okay. I just wanted to say that what I was thinking about as you were speaking about the liminal is that it can also be true of collective.
Oh yes.
Yeah, I'm thinking of our meeting, which has just separately incorporated its school and is in it's almost a liminal condition for our community. And I found it very inspiring that, I need to go back and find some way to ritualize this for the community.
Yeah, after 9/11, the whole culture was plunged into liminality.
Yeah.
That's a good example. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And I had one point of information. When did Christianity drop the idea of reincarnation?
Oh, it was one of the councils, but I can't remember which one.
Okay,
thank you. Also, unfortunately, dropped the idea of dreams sent by God. I can tell you a quick story, which is really tragic. When St. Jerome was translating the Bible into Latin towards the end of the 4th century, he had been reading Cicero, and he had a dream in which he's hauled before the heavenly court and criticized and punished for reading pagan philosophers. And that scared him to death. So when he woke up, and he was in the middle of translating Leviticus, where it says you shouldn't do augury or fortune telling. I forget the chapter and verse. He translated it as you shouldn't interpret dreams, because he felt that was a pagan practice. And he'd been warned by this dream not to do it. So the whole tradition of somnia ar Deo missa, dreams sent by God, which was so important, say, in the Gospel of Matthew, all those important dreams,
and
just disappeared from the
many.
Christian tradition. Yeah. But I can't remember when they got rid of reincarnation. I just think that's very sad. But I think it was necessary for the Christian theology.
Well, as we know it.
I
personally put reincarnation back in.
Yeah, I would too. But
You mentioned there might be demonic spirits. Is there any reading you could recommend in regards?
Yes. There's in the University of Wales at Lampeter, Lampeter, there's a group called the Religious Experience Research Unit. It was started by an English zoologist called Thomas Hardy. And they have huge collections of numinous and religious experiences. And on their website, there's a paper about demonic experiences.
Okay.
It's available, an open paper, by a woman called Jacobson, I think was her name. And it's a story of people who've had these kind of experiences of demons. And, I think it's an open question about whether there are these kind of spirits. Jesus obviously took them very seriously. So, if you're an Enlightenment fanatic, you probably dismiss them, but I wouldn't like to dismiss them out of hand. So,
thank you.
Yes.
During your talk today, I had several thoughts. One of my attractions has always been Zen Buddhism and the kind of idea of equanimity of greeting each experience you have as a guest.
And sorry, I couldn't hear.
Greeting each experience you have as a guest and not making a distinction, but that's kind of a challenge to get to that point.
High level stuff.
And one of my inspirations has been the poet Rilke, and one of his couple of his quotes. One that ought not our oldest sufferings be yielding more fruit by now. And there's just this idea that there's a ripening.
Yeah.
And we're tempted to fruit too quickly and not let things grow and develop and transform, before they can arrive. And I'm very moved by that idea, and also his idea of happiness, not that happiness can really exist, that premature profit of imminent loss. But he also goes on this journey in one of the elegies through the valley of pain and meets the laments and all of this stuff. And at the end, he finds that happiness falls. So Those are just thoughts that were coming to me.
Thank you. Thank you. I think we're going to run out of time. Who's in charge of the time here?
We'll take these two.
Okay.
And then we'll have to stop.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Many of the themes, particularly radical acceptance that you talked about, reminded me over the last 30 years, I've worked with a lot of addicts and recovering addicts. And addiction causes tremendous suffering, both for the individual who's afflicted with it, as well as everybody who's within their interpersonal realm. But those who do get into recovery and are able to move on with their lives past the addiction and use a 12-step approach, use the serenity prayer all the time. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, change the things I can, and have the wisdom to know the difference.
Right, that's a form of acceptance.
Yeah, and for me personally, that's been a wonderful little prayer to remind myself of each day. What do I have control over? What don't I have control over?
Yeah.
And either take action or just accept.
Right, thank you for that. Yeah, I'd forgotten that. Yeah.
I'd just like to share a story. It's a story I tell people when I think they might benefit from it, or, you know, they share it. And the story is that, you know, there was one day when the devil was lying around, and people were happy, and he didn't like this, and he said, "Oh my God, I have to make people miserable again. But what can I do?" So he talked to his minions, and they had all kinds of ideas, but none of them appealed to them. And finally, he said, "You know what? I'm going to come up with a single word, and that word will cause suffering forever." And the word he chose, the word he came up with, was "should." And that is...
Thank you. Thank you. We shouldn't forget that.
Lionel, thank you very much. Friends...